going on with Elsa in heaven? Like, is she having a bad day? And it's so bitter.
Hello, Addison.
Billy, not only do I have to take a deep breath, I think this was the most, like, I genuinely cried, the most gut-wrenching, but also the best episode, I say, of season two of 1923.
I am very excited to get into the emotions and how you're feeling, and specifically your emotions. But first, can I just take a minute and say, I told you so. I said I had a big interview coming up with Clyde Brian Conowall, and you're like, who? What? Ha ha ha. And lo and behold, all this time, this is me, Peacock, strutting into the podcast today, feeling pretty good.
He was the one, it's like the one that you're like, don't worry about him. Don't worry about him. Don't worry about him. And then you're like, crud, I should have been worrying about him.
Also, I kept that secret for like 4 weeks, which was really difficult as I wrote like episode preview videos. That's why I kind of always like skirted around any conversation around Jack. I'm like, oh, interesting. Moving along.
Well, you did tell me, you're like, when I told you I was editing the interview or I was pulling something from it, and you go, you didn't listen to the whole thing, did you?
Right.
And I'm kind of like, what? Doesn't matter? You're like, yeah, don't, because there's a spoiler. And that was not, I don't know, I didn't really have an expectation in my head, but it wasn't that.
That was a stunner. So a little behind the scenes, I didn't actually see the episode at the time I talked to him. Someone just sort of described what happened in an email to me.
Oh.
That was the information I got to kind of work on. So I didn't actually see the clip. He described it a little bit. The full interview is here coming up at the end of the podcast. And it's 30 minutes long. He's really just a joyful person to talk to. Like, he was a lot of fun. We really got along well.
He seems like the sweetest Irish leprechaun is what I think. Like, when I think of the guy on the other side of the rainbow with some Lucky Charms, it's him.
Yeah. Yeah. People are surprised to find he's not Irish. He's just an American. Like, that was stunning to some, but so much to talk about this week. It was like trying to drink water from a fire hose.
Oh, I know. Well, let's get into trivia real quick and that out of the way in the best way. But let's start there real quick.
Yep. We got last week's and this week's. Last week's trivia question was without a doubt the most answered trivia question that we've ever had on this podcast.
Wow.
Winnetka, the Chicago suburb that Hillary and Paul are taking Alex to. It's a wealthy village with a population around 13,000. And it's an oddly popular movie town named the famous movie Home from Winnetka. And
Home
you
Alone?
Actually knew this one.
Home Alone. Right?
Yes, that's it. Addison, yay!
Yes, I get a shirt.
You get a shirt. So Home Alone, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, also filmed in Winnetka, Uncle Buck. There's a couple of others. Actually, an odd amount of John Candy films were filmed in Winnetka. I don't know what the correlation is there. But some bad news, good news. Maria was the first one in, and she correctly knew that it was Home Alone. Bad news is I found out that we actually don't ship to Canada.
Oh, shoot.
Right? Yeah, I know. I didn't know we had that many Canadian and European listeners, so that's awesome. But we found a workaround. Maria, I'm going to ship it to her brother's place in Ohio. She's going to visit him, get her t-shirt. And that's a t-shirt, by the way, from the Y Collection at tasteofcountrystore.com, which is the same prize for this week's trivia.
I'm so glad that you figured out a way to get it to her. That's exciting.
Yeah, I was relieved as well, because I hate to have someone do good and then not get their flowers, so... It's coming your way, Maria, or his way. Hopefully he doesn't steal it from you.
That would be something my brother would do. Mm-hmm. What is this week's trivia question?
This week's trivia question, what were Jack Dutton's final words?
Oh, I do know this one.
Yep.
Staff can I say it?
Taste of...
No, well, I mean, not say it. Sorry. I didn't mean it like... Billy's face drastically changed. I kind of meant mouth it, but we'll talk off camera.
Yeah. All right. We'll figure it out. Staff at tasteofcountry.com. First person to correctly answer that. And by the way, you can only win the prize once. So that's kind of the rule. Like, we might come around and get people a second time, but if you've won, you're ineligible to win it a second time. But the first person in gets one of those Y Collection t-shirts from tasteofcountrystore.com, where we're having a flash sale currently up to 40% off. Woo!
That was great. Okay, let's talk about, unless you want to talk more trivia, but I think we're good there. Let's
What do you want to begin this week?
I want to dive in with Spencer. He's like the least important. He's not the least important. He is the least important in this episode, but his arrival causes obviously the biggest plot shift.
There were so many things with this episode that had they happened in any other episode, I would have spent a long time focusing on them. And Spencer's journey on train is one of those, because we learn a lot about Spencer's war history. We find out that he fought in the Argonne Forest, which is in northern France, I believe, in World War I. And this is a really famous battle. It's called the Lost Battalion of the Argonne Forest. Highly recommend the Wikipedia search here, but this is a real deal. There is about 500 men that went in. Maybe 150, 200 of them came out because they were surrounded by Germans and took a lot of casualties. So all those flashback scenes were him in one of the most notorious World War I battles that America faced. It happened right during the end of the war, but it explains a lot about his character, I think, if you kind of dive into that.
But that's all we really see of him this whole episode, is that little snippet on the train.
That's it. We know coming up, there's some sort of scene where he's running quickly on the train. Like, we saw that from one of the teaser videos. It's like a microsecond little clip of him running. So something happens. But he's going to train into Livingston, which is where the rest of the Duttons are going to be, to hopefully pick him up and escort him safely home.
Yeah, that's got to be what that train scene is he might realize there's bad news waiting for him. Like, somehow he gets that maybe feeling, and so he's running off the train early.
I think it is somehow related to him specifically. Like, there's not greater trouble on the train, because everybody else on the train is just reading their newspaper, going about their business, smoking their cigarettes.
Yes.
And he's sprinting through the car. So he either sees what's happening just outside, or some have theorized maybe that he sees Alex stranded and needs to save her. A bit of a stretch, I feel like, but possible.
I have a hot take on Alex, but we'll get there. Spencer coming home is what really tees up everything for us. Jacob is now headed to the train station with the sheriff, a few of the cowboys. They're all going to be waiting for Spencer because Banner and his men are equally coming, waiting to kill him. So I do think we're going to see a massive eruption of a little bit of like a mini war maybe at the train station of just, chaos, who can get to him first.
Everybody's anticipating a big shootout. And we know through the trailers and teaser videos that we get some sort of shootout at the Dutton Ranch, but everybody's anticipating something to happen at this train station. But we're a few Yellowstone or a few 1923 days away, right? The sheriff says the train's not coming in for 2 or 3 days. So they're going to have to sit there and kind of wait it out for that long. And that'll allow Banner's men plenty of time to show up.
Do we just kind of get into, do we talk about Jack or do we kind of wait?
No, I think we could probably get into Jack, because you know what the weird thing is? Like, I counted, there were 7 deaths on this show, on this episode.
On this episode? Like,
7 deaths, if you think about it. This episode to me felt like, I don't know if this was your experience growing up.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Mom would go out of town for the weekend, right? And like, you'd be left home with dad, and it was fun. It was casual. It was cool. Maybe even a little lazy. You're eating pizza, watching movies. And then it's like an hour till mom's car is going to pull back into the driveway. And dad's like, all right, round them up. It's time to do these dishes. It's time to clean. Like, everybody's just working hard. All the action's happening. So we kind of get back up to speed and where mom expects it. Like, the cast got doged this episode. Like, we needed, and Jack's death was really overshadowed and maybe not even the most important death of this episode.
I know. Well, and that to me, I agree with you. And I mean, what was it, last episode, episode 5 and 4, or maybe it was just 4, we were saying kind of strung out. We felt like it was slow. And I agree with you. I think we could have done Jack's character more justice. Especially, gosh, all over social media, I posted a video from an interview with Michelle Randolph, and I asked what, her and Darren Mann work so close together. Gosh, I can't talk. And so I said, what were their quirks? And anyways, I say all this, Darren reposted it. So I started going down his stories and just the amount of people who are saying how beloved Jack is. And when I was reading that, I was like, I agree, but I don't think we treated him as beloved of a character as he was to get the airtime in the way that it was set up. Like, I think they needed, like, we should put a Jack's death almost in episode 5 and that be the only death.
I agree. There was someone who had an opinion several episodes ago of our podcast. Gosh, and I wish I had their name written down too, who was like, what's been going on with Jack? I feel like he could die because no one's really talking about him or paying attention to him. Gosh, if that person wasn't absolutely correct on that.
Literally.
So to set the scene, Jack is supposed to stay home at the ranch, but he decides he's going to go chase Uncle Jake or Jacob Dutton because they don't have enough men. En route to the train station, he comes across Clyde, who he thinks is a good guy because Clyde is a livestock agent. And they're just kind of casually talking. Clyde asks her about Spencer, the brother, and Jack says he's the best person ever with the gun. And Clyde's like, oh, is that right? Boom, boom, shoots him twice.
Well, he says, he's like, I'm a close second, which that was in my head. I'm like, you're a little, anyways, continue. And then I'll get into why I'm frustrated by Jack's comment.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Continue. Well, for me, I'm like, okay, you're pumping up Spencer, but in that situation where, like, clearly you don't know. I mean, he thinks that Clyde is a good guy, yeah. But I'm like, why on earth would you sit there after pumping up Spencer and be like, well, I'm a close second. Like, it's not time to peacock. Like, just shut up and keep things moving. And a little bit of, like, he reminds me of like the little brother syndrome where it's like you want to kind of prove that you're also one of the big dogs. And I'm like, this is not a time to be a big dog. Like, shut up.
And so I feel like Jack was Jack to the end. Like, he was like, he died a very Jack way.
He asked for it a little bit. And I hate saying that because Billy, when I watch it, I go, like a verbal. And then I started crying. I was like, am I well? Probably not. But when he said that, I was like, you idiot. And then pow, pow, pow.
There are some people, there is a group of fans online who think that Jack may not be dead.
Okay. Here's my thing. When he first got shot, I was like, maybe he lives. And then when Clyde came and shot him in the head, I was like, there's no way. Also, unless the whole cast is brilliant, but like Michelle Randolph had posted something and so did Julia Schlafer of like, you were such a beloved character. Darren Mann is posting like, thank you so much for my time on 1923. Like, why would they all be, man, that is some major fabrication and communication if this is not correct.
Yeah.
He's dead.
I tend to agree too, because if you see there's an image of them dragging Jack's body through the forest and his eyes are open, he's very dead looking. Like, he's not moaning or twitching or anything. The only reason people think that is because there's this scene of Jacob and Kara in what looks to be like a hospital. But he's dead.
He's gone. We have so many. We have two pregnant women. We have Spencer coming back. Like, there's multiple moments for a hospital situation still.
Okay, so the Jack scene teared you up somewhat.
I don't think I realized how much I admired his character or just like had a fondness for him, especially a fondness with him and Elizabeth until he was dead.
I never got attached to him. Like, I teared up during this episode and other places, and maybe it's because I knew it was coming, but it was so sudden. I think in episode 7, we'll get a little bit more of like post Jack emotions from Elizabeth and Kara. Yeah. And that'll be really, really painful to watch.
Well, Michelle just
go ahead.
Michelle posted kind of like a carousel of photos from set. And on the very last one is her with a tissue. And you can tell that she's like really crying. And I'm like, we haven't seen that scene yet. So I'm assuming to your point, we're about to get interesting. That.
Okay. You know, people, I think also want to go right to the family tree. And I'm not going there yet because I don't think this really changes that because Elizabeth's still pregnant.
They both are. And Alex.
And also, I think any theories that we come up with and settle on here are instantly going to be wrong once episode 7 starts and ends. So I'm showing some family's tree restraint, Addison. You'd be proud of me.
I am proud. And actually, Something that I do want to touch on, though, is when Alex was on the boat coming to – no, no, sorry, not the boat. When she was on the train. And we think that she knows that maybe she miscarried after she got punched by the pit pocketer.
Yep.
But then when she's with Hillary and Paul, she tells them that she's pregnant. And then on their journey, she, you know, she's bundling up because they say, you know, you're pregnant, so you need more warmth. So maybe we read that scene wrong. I'm realizing this. Like the previous
episode. I think we must have. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe we did. She's clearly still pregnant or telling people she's pregnant. And that's a big part of her journey going forward. So we have two potential mothers to John Dutton's grandfather, I guess it would be. Either one of them it could be, but you know, we'll find out here at the end of, because what happens to Alex and what happens to Elizabeth is like a big, big question mark.
Let's dive into Alex.
Okay. This is the scene that got me.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Wow. I loved Hillary and Paul. They were just such a delightful couple and they were so gung ho for everything. And like, they're having an adventure together. And I don't know if you made a list of like the top five bad decisions in the history of the Yellowstone franchise, two of the top three would be Spencer's decision not to have dinner with the mafia guys in Texas and Paul's decision to blow off the locals' advice that there's no more gas stations. Like, dude, that's an issue. Like,
that was so, I'm like, I don't know if you're just dumb or just like you haven't ever done something like this because you're so wealthy. And so you're just not having to think through stuff. Like, like their form of transportation is not normally traveling across in a car. But yeah, I agree. As soon as that local was saying, don't drive, take the train, I knew immediately. I was like, they're dead. They're dead. Whether it's all three or the couple, they're dead. And unfortunately, I was right. I don't know if you felt this way, Billy, but I don't know the point of Taylor Sheridan putting them in the show other than just to give us this hope of like, oh, one nice couple out of this entire story, you know, who doesn't want to cause harm to our main family.
Well, they advanced them. They got her to Wyoming. You know, they physically moved her along. They got her out of a jam and advanced her to Wyoming.
Well, she's still in a jam, but yes.
She's a pickle. But I think the levity and the kindness that they brought was much needed on this show at that point. So I think you're right to that effect. But to back up a little bit and share the story, because there are some people who actually don't watch the show and just listen to the podcast or watch the videos.
Oh, yeah.
Alex tells Hillary and Paul her whole story, and they are just moved by the cinematic aspects of it. Mm-hmm. And Paul says, essentially, I got a car. I'll drive you to Montana. Mm-hmm. And they do. They set off and they teach Hillary and Alexandra how to drive. And they're having a great time. There's laughter.
It's sweet.
They're sipping martinis in the back seat. The weather starts to turn. Things are still pretty good. And then they get to a town called Buffalo, Wyoming. And while they're filling up for gas and putting chain on the tires, a local woman behind the register is like, take the train. There's roads to Montana, but there's no more gas stations. Personally think she could have tried a little harder to stop them. You know, I mean, I feel she just kind of shoulder shrugged and off they went. Like,
all right.
Should have repeated herself, I feel like, to make sure they were clear. But off they go. And then Alex falls asleep and wakes up freezing cold to find the car stopped, them out of gas. Hillary's frozen. Paul's off in the distance, fallen and frozen to death. And she's lost in the wilderness.
I think she dies. I don't think she lives. How in that situation? Who is casually coming by? I mean, she's in the middle of nowhere. It's freezing. If Paul has died just walking out just a few feet, maybe a few yards in front, like how do you think this ends with Alex? Like how does she get to the next transportation? What would your wild theory be?
I don't know, but I don't think she dies there. Like, I'm not against the she dies theory, but I feel like we got to get her to or close to a reunion with Spencer. Like, it's either going to be full on tragic where she's very close to Spencer and dies, or all the way there. Maybe they have a night, they have a reunion, and the next day she dies. I don't know the answer. I don't know who saves her yet.
Staff at tasteofcountry.com. If you have a wild theory, I would love to hear those.
I really loved that couple, though. I thought they were delightful. A little cocky.
Cocky and innocent. Innocent just in the sense of like unaware of the world.
It was kind of a classic crooning the Dunning-Kruger effect, where like because you're an expert in one area, you believe you're experts in other areas. Mm. You overestimate how smart you are. Like that. That's what it was. I didn't want to see him go, but that was the big cliffhanger. And then, of course, we get to Elsa with another one of her uplifting speeches.
Billy, you said it best in our preview video. You're like, what is going on with Elsa in heaven? Like, is she having a bad day? And it is so spot on. Yeah. It's so bitter.
Yeah. She is really, someone has really put some salt in her stockings because she is not happy. So far we've talked about Jack, Hillary, and Paul. That's only three of the seven deaths. Right?
Well, yeah. Well, we knock out four with Tiona.
Marshall Kent's death was the most surprising death of the episode to me.
It was, killing him at the beginning. I was so happy. I was over him yapping. I'm like, get off the screen.
Yeah. 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 Felt good about that one.
Yeah. I felt no conviction.
And it was a good death scene. I hated to see Pete go, but I think that was pretty predictable. We all knew that.
He wasn't sticking around. Shots,
no, he was gone for it. And I knew Runs His Horses would die too, because that just seems to be what happens to Tiona. I thought it was a great scene. I thought the whole Tiona story arc is an example of the brilliance of the show and Taylor Sheridan. It was important to the episode and the series. It was challenging to watch at times, because it reminded us of some cruel twists in American history. The acting was strong. It came to a great conclusion, and we see the point overall in the big picture. Tiona, she was good. She was very good. And I know you might get a chance to talk to her soon, but when she finally pulls the trigger and kills that priest, I choked up a little during that scene. Like,
yeah,
it just felt like such a relief, and like the cinematography of it all was just so beautiful. How she was framed as she aimed that gun down at the Father Renaud, and finally she was free of this chase. It was cathartic in a lot of ways. And I really do applaud this storyline.
I honestly want to know from her, Amina Nieves, I want to know, like, the question I want to ask her is, like, walk me, what was in your head in that moment? Like, walk me through as an actor how you got to that. I mean, it just was so emotionally gripping. Yeah. Like, how did you emotionally get there?
That's a great question. So Addison's going to get a chance to talk to, hopefully, a couple of cast members this coming week, and we'll have those for you next week. Possibly one of them being Amina Nieves. We say possibly because it always is tends to change, and we don't know how much time we're going to get or what the format's going to be. But I think that's a great question for her. I'm also kind of curious to know, and I'm not sure exactly how to phrase this, but like, this is such a personal story for her being Native. Like, I wonder if leaning into it being personal was helpful to her, or maybe sort of made things confusing, like made her too attached to the character that, I don't know what the question is there though, but
we'll marinate on it before.
She was good. I don't know what she does after this. You know, hopefully she gets some other roles because she's a good actor. But I thought this season in particular, she showed some other parts of her personality where she was a teenage girl. She was young. She was vulnerable. Like, that all kind of rounded out her character in a way that season one didn't.
I wasn't as sad about her dad dying. That sounds really bad, but that was her dad, right? Her father?
It was. And his was another death that I thought was a little overshadowed as well. Like, in another episode, that's a really touching, painful scene, right?
Yeah.
We see her crying and weeping over the body, and it's moving. But in this one, it's like, just kind of keep clicking, clacking around because there's more people to kill.
You will, and because it's like high on the heels, here comes Father and out, Renaud.
Yeah.
That was a death. I was like, praise God that we no longer have to think about him coming after her.
That was such a good scene with him shouting at her, her shouting back. She throws the fire at him. Like, I was like, oh my God, I was just riveted.
What did he say? Are you renouncing?
He wanted her to renounce all of her sins before he killed her, because he wanted to kind of send her into heaven.
Such an interesting thought process, but that's a topic for another day.
There's some good acting in this series. I mean, and Timothy Dalton's another one. His acting has been really good, and I think his bedroom sequences are probably the worst thing to happen in a Yellowstone franchise to date.
It's like, grotesque at this point.
This was beyond. Like, I think if you book that kind of video up on like a legit porn site, it would get taken down for being too obscene.
Yeah.
Like, that's how awful it was. And it got shoehorned into 1923. And I was pretty critical of it in the video. And I guess I want to frame this in the sense that I don't really object to like Taylor Sheridan creating that sort of sequence, right? Like, great creatives need to be able to sort of really work those boundaries and really work those edges and like write things that are offensive and may have a place elsewhere. Like, this type of sequence, maybe in like a horror film or like a really sort of art house suspenseful thriller where you're sort of signing up to be really just challenged or rocked off your moors. Like, there's a cinema for that kind of thing. It might not be what we're into, but it fits. It doesn't fit on Paramount Plus, which is a sister to CBS television. Like, someone needed to say, Taylor, too far.
Too much. Well, and forget about it being on Paramount Plus, you know, sister station to CBS. It's just more of like, I don't think it was, it got to a point where I was like, this is no longer necessary. You're not proving a point more. You're not painting a different picture. Like, it's too much. It's just too much.
It helped me sort of understand one of the reasons I didn't like the show Lom and Bass Reeves and how that ended. And if you remember, I know this is a while ago, but that show ended with Bass Reeves in that same unit. It's called a pillory, the thing where you stick your arms and your neck through and it clamps down in this wood. He was in one of those and he needed to be saved by his sheriff, Dennis Quaid's character,
to
come free. And like, Bass Reeves was built up as this great hero. And then it was just such a dark and evil twist at the very end of that show that it was just, someone needed to reel it back in and remind him that like, this is still a show that people need to sign up for and watch.
Yeah.
There are a lot of options out there. And it didn't happen there. It didn't happen this time. And Taylor Sheridan didn't write Bass Reeves, so that's not necessarily his fault. But it was a big mistake.
My only thought with this, and it didn't need to go this far, but all I can come to in my head is that he wrote it like this to explain why Banner might turn on him. Because you can tell Banner is starting to get not just – like, he's morally conflicted of he's walking into the room and he's like, what the heck? You know what I mean? Just really, you can tell he's grappling with, at what point am I doing this job for Donald Whitfield? But then morally he's along lines that I don't agree with. So I'm assuming it's for the purpose of showing that Banner's going to turn on him. But I think that you could still do that in a not as grotesque way.
Sometimes there's scenes where like you can allude that someone's killed without actually showing the bullet ripping through their head, right?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, the camera cuts away and you just kind of get the effect of it and your imagination does the rest of the work. Like, our imagination should have been left to do the rest of the work here. We didn't need to see the bullet going through the head, so to speak.
My imagination was not left to be wondered.
Yeah. So if you haven't watched, if you're one of those people who have not watched the episode and you plan on watching, from about 12:20 to about 16:40, just skip right on over it and you're going to be better off.
And you're not going to miss any part of the plot.
I don't think you will. I don't think you will.
In this episode, in the beginning we do when Jacob and them are getting ready to leave, but like, Kara and Elizabeth, they're not pivotal in this episode.
No, they're just at home waiting. We do have some scenes coming up with them. There's a photo of Elizabeth hiding with a gun, and there's a photo of a video of Kara Dutton saying, "Of all the things I've done for this ranch, this takes the cake." That was part of the trailer. So presumably that's all on the way in episode 7, which, by the way, surprise to everyone, episode 7, the final episode.
I know. Literally, what?
Yeah, it's a 2-hour finale. I don't know why. Like, why not have? But that's a stunner. So this Sunday, and then we're done with 1923. That bugs me. Why not put the schedule out there and let us all know what we're working with here? Like, we don't need to be surprised with the finale. Yeah. And I guess I just wanted to have 2 more chances to do the podcast and everything as well.
Well, it does sound, aren't they? We're going to have other spinoff shows potentially, right, to talk about?
Well, you teed me up right where I wanted to go next, Addison. It's
like oh, that was completely unintentional, so you're welcome.
All right, so a little bit of an update on the known and rumored spinoffs here. Madison, the show starring Michelle Pfeiffer, is said to have filmed in late 2024. So that is imminent. This year, maybe even soon, we should get a TV show called Madison, which is a spinoff of sorts. I think it's set in the same area. I don't think there's any related characters as of yet. But that's a Taylor Sheridan show. The Beth and Rip show, I think at this point, is still... I mean, they're talking about it, but I don't think there's been any development or any progress on that.
More hypothetical.
I think so. Maybe along the lines of like what we've heard about the show 1944... which before that was the show on the 4/6, which never came to be. So I think 1944 and the Beth Rip show are 2 that are like, we think are going to happen, but no hard concrete sort of bona fides on that. There is a new one. Have you heard?
Oh, I have, with Darren Mann, right?
Okay. I don't know of a Darren Mann show. Maybe you got one. I don't know. What do you got?
Wait, maybe I don't. Talk amongst yourself as I research this real quick.
Okay. So, Luke Grimes, who played Casey Dutton on Yellowstone, is rumored to have his own spinoff, which was going to be kind of a procedural. It would air on CBS. And by procedural, it means like you can each episode's its own little storyline. Most people probably know what a procedural is. And it's based much more on his history as a Navy SEAL. It gets into that quite a bit more. So. Now, that's not confirmed. Puck is reporting that. They've been pretty solid with the facts so far, so people are tending to forward whatever Puck has to say on this. No dates, no times, not even guaranteed it's going to happen, but Casey Musgraves. And presumably, Kelsey Asbell and Brecken Merrill would all be coming to CBS.
I just looked at Darren Mann's Instagram. I don't know why I thought I saw something on his Instagram last night. I was incorrect. Yeah.
Helen Mirren's in a new show, isn't she? Isn't she in, she's in Mobland, I think. Yeah. Yeah, Helen Mirren's in Mobland.
In what?
It's called Mobland, M-O-B-L-A-N-D. Oh,
Mobland, 2 different words. I heard Mobland. I'm like, huh?
Yeah. So she's in that. And, of course, we know Michelle Randolph is in Landman. And these are 2 very good reasons why it's not likely to be a season 3 of 1923. Because people aren't generally in 2 shows at the same time for very long. Like there might be some crossover episodes. So either Michelle and Kara get killed or season 2 and we're done, which is what I actually think is going to happen. I think season 2 is the end of it.
Surely. I'm excited. So we get, not all the time, but I hopefully, depending on... I will be talking to some aspect of the cast tomorrow. And a lot of times Paramount will give us screeners before just so we're kind of aware of, you know, what's happening. So you can talk about it in the interview and then you just wait until the actual episode airs. And this just came to mind. I mean, this will be the last episode of 1923. When I talked to Michelle Randolph, she was saying that, you know, they went to cowboy camp and she had learned to ride a horse. And I think she has even learned cutting, if I remember correctly. And she went up to Taylor and was like, I learned this, when can I actually use it? And then I asked her, well, do you get to ride a horse? And at the time she's like, I can't tell you because that would technically be would be a spoiler, like a yes or no answer would be a spoiler, which I was like, dadgum. But I just realized I could ask, like, I will find out in episode 7.
You'll know.
She actually got to ride a horse. sorry, my brain just went straight there.
You got a busy day tomorrow.
I do have a busy day tomorrow.
And so we're sending her all over the place. She's become like our television correspondent, talking to the cast of Farmer Wants a Wife. If you're a fan of that reality show, Addison does a great job covering that. Landman, or 1923 actors, and then
The Road with Blake Shelton and Keith Urban. That's tomorrow too.
As you said that, I was thinking to myself, how much of this is embargoed? But that part's not embargoed.
Oh, no, that's not embargoed. That's already out there in the world.
Yeah. There are some other details that are embargoed, but you're getting a chance.
I'm not sharing the embargo details, but it's been fun. I've been loving covering television and film.
It's been fun. I don't know where we go after this. Landman ends, and then we can probably have another episode or two here, I think, with some of these interviews and some follow-up on some of these other shows, but then we're kind of due for another break, which I wouldn't mind a little bit of a break, but I certainly loved the weekly conversations and so much engagement. Man, this is crazy. I set our interview with Brian Conowall up to premiere yesterday, Monday morning at 10 a.m., and it was about 24 hours where it was in premiere mode, which means you can't watch it, but you can kind of interact. There was like 100 comments before the dang video even started. Like, it was bananas. Like, dang. People just love this conversation. I know. And the emails and the comments, like, it's been fun. I've enjoyed, even when we don't agree, I enjoy and respect all the opinions that we've had. And it's been a really healthy conversation, too. No one, very rarely do you see anybody attacking one another. It's been, that's probably my favorite part.
Yeah. I say let's get into some Q&A.
Yeah, staff@tasteofcountry.com is where to find us, or comment on the YouTube channel.
Alrighty, let's dive in. Todd from our email says, I like a little gratuitous nudity as much as the next dirty old man, but this whole Donald Whitfield subplot is getting to be too much. We get it. He's a scumbag.
Yeah, 100% agree. The first time, season one, I was like, oh, that's kind of kinky. And then I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. And now it's like, oh, good.
That's kind of dark.
I appreciate the honesty on email there, Todd.
The next one is from @monica99, who says, I'm absolutely sick of Elsa's voiceovers. Amen, girl. Which just repeat the same thing over and over again. Yeah, let's see. I've learned that the rapist is Winter. I've learned that childbirth sounds like you're being decapitated. What else have I learned from Elsa?
just about how man has just ravaged and ruined the earth.
Yes. Can't forget about that.
She was such a ray of sunshine on 1883. You remember?
To be honest, no, at this point.
She was beaming. She had that bright smile, and she was lightning yellow hair, and she was falling in love all over the place. Like, it was a wild time. And then she dies, and now she's like, childbirth is like getting ripped in two.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happened to her. In all seriousness, I think her voiceovers aren't really serving any sort of purpose any longer. And they keep kind of coming back to her, but it even kind of sounds like she's phoning in the VO. Compared to some of those early episodes. And it's just sort of a way to get from one scene to the next, or to get us out of an episode. Maybe that'll change with episode 7, but I haven't learned anything new from her really since season 1.
Yeah, no. All right, Extraordinary on YouTube says, I'm going to defend Donald's actions. Oh, this is interesting. I thought it was pointless until this episode. It's hard to watch, but I imagine it is what fully turns Banner against Donald. Oh, I guess that's similar to what I mentioned.
Here's my issue with that theory. And I applaud Extraordinary for standing up and making that statement. Because that could end up being the case. And if that's the case, then I guess it does have some sort of purpose. I would argue that maybe there's another way to do that. But sure, that could be. Banner has a son. And he's married. But he doesn't seem to me like the kind of the guy. He's not like a woman's rights kind of guy. I didn't feel like. He's a father, but he's not a girl dad. If he was a girl dad, I'd say, yeah, this is probably the issue. But he's already more or less told his wife that he's in for a penny, in for a pound with whatever Donald Whitfield wants to do. So while I do kind of think maybe he might rise up against Donald Whitfield, if it happens, I don't know necessarily it's going to be because of this scene. But that's really the only plausible explanation that anybody came up with is just that. Other than that, it's just cruel.
Yeah. I still just waffle on that. Alrighty though, Jeremy says, what do y'all think will happen to Elizabeth? She seemingly lost everything. Does she end up back in Boston? Does Spencer lose a leg? Did we talk about like there's a potential for Spencer to lose a leg?
Let's take the first part first.
Okay.
Elizabeth, this is interesting. Where's she going to go now? Jack's dead. She really has no reason to stay on the ranch, right?
Oh, yeah. But she's become family, and Kara Dutton is so, like, nurturing. I think she ends up staying.
She was ready to hop out of there.
I know.
After the wolf bite. Like, I don't think so. I think best case scenario for her, she's back home with her mom. Worst case scenario, she dies through all of this. But no, they haven't really hinted on what her plan B might be. We don't know. She doesn't know her husband's dead yet. Right?
Yeah.
And then as far as Spencer losing a leg. So this is why this is an interesting question. Because way back, I think it was season 4, episode 2 of Yellowstone. John Dutton, Kevin Costner, mentions to Jimmy that... Because if you remember Jimmy on Yellowstone, he had the neck injury because of the bull mm-hmm. riding. John Dutton mentions that his grandfather used to have phantom pains after he lost a leg. So the grandfather would perhaps be Spencer Dutton. That's what I've been telling people. If you look for the person without a leg, then you got John Dutton's grandfather. Now, it could be the grandfather on the other side. But yeah, Spencer could lose a leg in episode 7, and in which case we know he is John Dutton's grandfather, which that's problematic for the family tree.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into it quite yet.
We'll circle back. We'll circle back next episode. Okay. And then the last one I have for us is Gorilla in the Mist. It says there is a show called Alone, which would be an excellent fit for your channel. It is, to my knowledge, the most realistic and respected outdoor survival show of all time. Well, let me just give a little Google. Oops. Maybe not.
So a little more information about the show. It does sound kind of interesting. Maybe a little bit of a reality type show is kind of how he describes it. Contestants sent into the wild with only 10 survival items of their choosing. Whoever lasts the longest wins $500,000. Completely alone. It's raw. It's fascinating.
Oh, it's on Netflix. Wait.
Okay.
Maybe not.
Fair. I don't have Netflix, but I probably can acquire it. I appreciate this.
Sorry, it's also on the History Channel.
That's not helpful. Anyways, but so I appreciate this email on a couple of accounts. Or it was actually a YouTube comment. No, this is actually an email. We had asked kind of what other shows we should cover because we are looking for kind of some new shows to kind of plug some of the gaps, especially the long gaps like we had, I think, towards the end of last year. Mm-hmm. And I went back and forth with Gorilla in the Mist. I forget his real name. And we had a bit of a disagreement on the family tree a little bit, but I hope I didn't come off too strong or annoyed because, you know, being able to have kind of a healthy disagreement like this is... I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. He had a perspective on the family tree. I just don't agree with him. In a lot of cases, I don't agree with what people say about the family tree, because I think at the core of this, my opinion is like Taylor didn't know necessarily what he was doing at the onset. He didn't have it all mapped out when he started Yellowstone season 1, episode 1. So probably the right answer to all this is going to contradict something that's been told to us within Yellowstone 1883 or 1923. But I appreciate that he came back with this bit of information to kind of show that, you know, maybe all things are good. So thanks for continuing to listen, even though I kind of maybe strongly disagreed with you. I was in a bit of a bad mood last week and I responded. I ain't going to lie. I had kind of a rough week.
To make y'all feel better, Billy won't sugarcoat it with me either. So it's nothing personal.
Listen, we went out of town this past weekend for a little spring break getaway. And we're at the Airbnb, 3:30 in the morning. My middle son, he throws up over everything.
I didn't know that.
Everything.
Oh my gosh.
His brother, the sheets.
No, Billy, I'm so sorry. I realized today's Tuesday. Yeah, we haven't, I knew you were out of town yesterday. We haven't gone to catch up on the joys of parenting.
Oh my gosh. It ended up being okay. No one else has gotten sick yet, but like, you know, I had a couple beverages on the night prior too. So I was like trying to.
You were not ready to be a parent in that, in that specific moment.
It smelled so bad. So that said, my
his attention span, yeah,
poured over.
It's not you. It's his children who puked, his son who puked that night on vacay. Yeah. Well, y'all, the Yellowstone 1923, or the Dunn Rules Yellowstone
1923. We got to talk about what's coming right after this.
Oh, sorry. Oh my gosh. Billy literally told me, he goes, don't forget what's coming up after this podcast. And here I am forgetting what's coming up after this podcast. Billy's favorite actor on 1923, Brian Conowall, who plays the one and only Clyde, who shoots Jack and really has quite a, like, that is a, if you're not a main character, you're like level two character, and to be given the responsibility of, like, he, meaning like he's just not in the original, like he's not part of the Dutton household, to be given a role to shoot one of the main characters, like A plus. Yeah. Dude,
not many people have killed a Dutton.
No,
none of them have lived.
We should send him a Yellowstone t-shirt. Congrats.
We should wear it too. 100%. Yeah, I'll take a picture of himself with it, holding my photo. Anyways, now do the thing.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, okay, now I'm going to do the outro. Now we're just going to inside jokes. Y'all, the Dutton Rules Yellowstone 1923 podcast is another investigative and fan interactive Town Square Media podcast. See y'all later.
And joining me now on the Dutton Rules podcast, Brian Conowall, the dirty, thieving scoundrel, Brian Conowall. I'm sorry. I'm taking what happened last night on 1923 and I'm making it personal. I shouldn't do that. I'm just affected by what happened.
I understand. Clyde is a rascal. No doubt about it.
Give me your reaction when you saw that in the script.
When I saw what a dirty, conniving guy.
Up and set up. So last night, episode 6 of 1923, we find Clive kills Jack Dutton. That's kind of the big spoiler. When you saw that in the script, your response to that?
I immediately shouted and was like, called for my wife. I said, oh my God, Heather, you're under, you know, lock and key information. Look at this. I mean, it's huge. Jack's a huge character. So I'm completely honored to be the guy who gets to do him in. It was awesome.
I mean, things tend to not go well with people who kill the Duttons. I've kind of thought you were a marked man really from the get-go. Once we found out you were a bit of a turncoat, I figured, okay, this is a great character, fun to watch.
Yeah.
This is going to catch up to him at some point in time.
I think Clyde is he's a smart guy, though. He's definitely caught in a bad place, but, I mean, he's a survivor. So, he's not afraid to get his hands dirty, for sure. You know, and if you go back to season one, you can see that he's a thinker, too. You know, originally, he's like, we got to get out of here. We got to get out of the state, you know, and Banner's not having it. So I think Clyde decides he's all in and he's going to, you know, do whatever it takes.
This all got me kind of rethinking what happened in season one. In a little bit, I want to ask you kind of about how you approached, especially that scene where you sign up for the livestock agency with Kara, because it's really interesting in retrospect. But first, take us right into the scene with Darren Mann, who plays Jack Dutton, his fatal scene. Kind of take us through the filming of that scene. Was there anything that happened that was remarkable? Was it a difficult scene to shoot?
It wasn't easy. We got delayed once because we got a lot of weather. It was pouring rain and then it snowed. And because of the rain, we had to make snow. And I'm riding in, you know, I ride in on a horse and we're doing a full lope on the horse. So, you know, you've got a vehicle with a personality. So there's gear everywhere, cameras. So we had a lane. We're sort of on this road. So you had to ride in, control the horse and then proceed to do the scene. So that was a challenge. I mean, I'm okay on a horse now. I'm getting all right. But just to do that and do the acting, and then, you know, when we fire blanks, you don't know what the horse is going to do. So we prep them for that. And sure enough, I think Darren's horse bucked pretty huge the first time. And we have great people in place for safety and all that. And, you know, the advisors and stunt guys, Jason Rodriguez, the guy who doubles me is a guy named Tad, who's just a legendary horseman from the world of rodeo. And, you know, he was there, Tad Griffith. And so he was there, you know, kind of helping and making sure everything went well, you know, because my job is to just get in there and really do the scene well. Right. But the great part about having the training was it went pretty smooth. With all the factors considering, you know, my horse didn't give me any trouble controlling them while you do the scene. So as an actor, it just exhilarating scene to do. Just awesome.
Is there a certain weight to a scene like that too? Especially maybe I'm more so on Darren's side, but I imagine you catch a whiff of it as well. I mean, a final scene like that. Is there a heaviness that you're sort of aware of as you're filming?
I was when I did a week in Texas, and when I ran into Darren, and he was immediately like, oh, you kill me, you know? And I was like, I'm sorry. You know, it's Taylor. Taylor writes it. Yeah. But for sure, because he's a beloved character. So hopefully, you know, if I do my job right, everyone will despise Clyde even more than they do.
Yeah, that's 100% true.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, I mean, talk about just cold-blooded, the way it happens. You know, Darren, his character, you know, Jack's such a great hero, and he's itching to fight, and he's, you know, he's constantly wanting to go to battle for the family. And here Clyde just takes him out without a peep. He doesn't even get to draw his gun.
So, where do you go to act in a scene like that? I mean, I've known you 4.5 minutes, and you're smiling. You seem like a good, jovial dude. Like, what dark space do you sort of have to sort of go through that scene convincingly?
Like, you know, you do a little actor stuff and just, you know, try to put yourself in the mindset of what a sociopath would do. Because I think Clyde is, you know, there was some question earlier on as you're getting the scripts, you know, some people do a lot of backstory, this or that, and you're playing the scenes you get. And I thought it was clear that this season, if there was any question about Clyde, full-blown psychopath, you know what I mean? So I just thought, I went into it thinking he's looking forward to it. I mean, he wants this. For whatever position he's been put in by this whole range war, Clyde's going to come out on top is sort of the attitude.
Hey, do you have, in kind of your filmography, have you had similar roles or characters that you've...
I don't think I've ever played anyone this evil. I mean, it's definitely, you know, up there as far as my favorite. Plus also, you know, I get to do a fair amount, which is always great as an actor, but no, this is the best. I mean, getting to be a cowboy, ride horses, shoot guns. I mean, it's like actor's dream, you know what I mean? It's fantastic.
I mean, I have so many follow-up questions, but first of all, how hard was it to keep this sort of state secret for, I mean, months, I imagine.
It's been hard. I think this is the first time I'm talking about it publicly, you know? Yeah.
It's going to feel a little bit scary. A lot of trust here.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. Otherwise, I mean, obviously the people who have the scripts know. So, you know, we discuss with the cast members what's going to happen. Oh my God, that's crazy. I'm excited. I'm excited for people to watch. It's going to be awesome.
So let's back up a little bit to kind of how you got the role. I imagine it was just kind of a traditional audition process for a role that, you know, at the time I felt wasn't a good role, but not a significant role. I didn't necessarily think you'd be a huge mover and shaker through the series like this.
To be honest, I didn't know either. I think the original call was for 2 episodes originally when I auditioned, but I had been a fan of Taylor's ahead of time. I knew him. I thought, I think I'd seen him on Sons of Anarchy, and I started tracking him a little bit as actors do, other guys working that, you know, stuff like that. And then when Sicario came out, and I was like, oh, this is that guy, he wrote that. So I had been sort of actively telling my agent and stuff, please get me on something with Taylor Sheridan. And 1883 came around, and I actually read for that. I read for I read for Cookie. I had to think of the name, which James Jordan ended up playing.
James Jordan.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes you feel like I knew that I had done a good tape. I knew the audition was good. And so I think that maybe, you know, it's Ben Richardson and Taylor and the same team. So I think maybe that helped when it came later to Clyde. But I did not end up getting that, obviously. And James is amazing. So
yeah,
there you go. You if you see somebody like that, oh, James got it. Great. Totally understand.
Well, I mean, I've been looking at you now and comparing it to a Cookie. I mean, they would have had to do far less makeup for you than they did James, because James is clean shaven and Cookie, that character was.
Yeah.
It took so long to figure out
the giant beard they gave him in that.
Yeah.
But he's great. And it's always interesting to see too, because I played it a little differently than James did. So in the audition, but he's always,
he played it almost a little. Actually, you know, reminded me, I used to work in kitchens kind of growing up, and James's character reminded me of like what a chef is like, a little bit crazy, super intense, very much my way is the highway kind of character.
No doubt. Like, I've never met a sane chef.
No, you know, they're all a little nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think your first major scene was probably opposite Helen Mirren and Robert Patrick, where you're signing up to be a livestock agent. And that's a great scene because we don't find out until, well, I guess we did know at that time, but I guess it didn't click to me a little bit later that you're going to be sort of a double agent. So what's your sort of approach there? You know, you have this sort of devious side, but you come across so mild mannered. And frankly, very likable during that scene.
Well, in the script, it was great. First of all, I got the scene. And again, kind of like the Darren reaction, I called my wife right away. I was in Montana. I said, oh my God, I'm going to do a huge scene with Helen Mirren and Robert Patrick. And most of it's me talking. You know, that was like, all right, it's, you know, this is the big moment. But it was strange because, Clyde being the double agent, I think in the script it said he's charming. And I believe that Harrison mentions that to Kara. Jacob mentions it to Kara in an episode before somewhere. He says, watch out for the charming ones. Right. So I tried to play it likable, you know. I think that if you're asking me, I think they went in there with a plan, you know, make sure you get hired as a livestock agent. This is critical to us infiltrating the Dutton clan. So, you know, I tried to make him a quasi jovial guy for that.
Yeah. And you can almost kind of see your character sort of, because the livestock agent that gets thrown out of the room before you is the opposite of chivalrous and polite and charming.
Yes.
He's rude. So it's almost like in the moment that sort of informs your character's decisions to be yes, ma'am. And you have a great accent.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
But especially in that scene. Was that difficult to sort of perfect?
Well, I've been working on accents. I have a fantastic coach, Jack Wallace, who's actually a descendant of William Wallace. So, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. I forget how long, how many generations, but it's great. And he's from the UK, also a redhead, which made me very comfortable. So we had actually been working together before I had the audition for 1923. You know, when you look like a leprechaun, you know, you've got to have a Scottish, you've got to have an Irish, you got, you know.
Sure. So it's just like being a carpenter and having a hammer.
Right. It's got to be in the toolbox for sure. So, so I came in with the advantage of having done it. You know, I'd done it on stage as well. I think more in a funny leprechaun. We've done different accents doing improv and stuff like that over the years. So accents I enjoy, but definitely challenging. I mean, you know, if you're doing an hour at a time and working on it, you know, you break it all down sort of word by word until you start doing full paragraphs. Yeah. And
something that just occurs to me about that scene is Jack's also in the room. And Jack's as you leave, room. He Jack's gives you a little bit of a dirty look that I didn't understand at the time. I don't know if his die had been cast at that point in Taylor Sheridan's mind. Like if he knew you two were going to come back together again, but he stink eyes you a little bit on your way out the door.
He does. I don't know. That's the brilliance of Taylor's writing, because he, you know, and they did a great edit where there's just one little look of Helen just sort of, you know, just does one of these, looks at Clyde. They both have their doubts. I think Jack had seen, you know, recognized him from one of the livestock meetings or something.
That's right. That's what it was.
Yeah. But what was cool was they didn't reveal me in any of those.
No.
It's understood that I'm there, but yeah. Yeah. That scene with that. I mean, that was, that's definitely a career highlight. Looking across the table at Helen Mirren and Robert Patrick. And, you know, we'd been having breakfast and coffee together for several weeks because we were up in Montana for like 3 months. And the scene's coming up, and we're reading the scripts, we're having coffee. And he goes, tomorrow's the big scene, kid, huh? Don't mess it up. You're playing with the big boys tomorrow. I was like, great. Thanks, Robert. Awesome.
Great talk. Thanks,
yeah, Bob. Yeah. He's the best. I love that guy.
Was Helen, everybody has just talked about how kind and hardworking and gracious Helen Mirren is. Did you get a chance to interact with her a little bit off camera as well?
I did. I had met her previous to the scene, which was nice. We were all on set for the big action sequence in episode 3, where we go after the Dutton. So yeah, we had some downtime around there, and she's just a sweetheart, down to earth. You know what I mean? You'd never know there was any. You know, I said to she's like one of the most awarded actresses on the planet. So it's like,
yeah,
and she's just, you know, down to earth, this, that, you know, talking about that, you know, we weren't even talking about the show, just talking about life. So that put me at ease.
How do you approach Helen Mirren? I mean, like, you're just, because you probably don't stand out too much from anybody, any extra or anything at the time. She doesn't know, like, you just kind of slick your hair back and just shoot your shot, yeah, so to speak. And
there's a lot of people with beards walking around, a lot of, and so I think we were sort of in the, we were on this big mountain, crazy on location. So I think I met her in the tent where they sort of had us so that we could get out of the sun in the shade, gotcha, you know, with the Hollywood chair. So I think it was Michelle Randolph was in there when I met her, talking to her already. I just said, Hey, I'm Brian. I'll be playing Clyde. Oh, hello. You know, just as simple as that, really.
You look to be, I'm 46. You look to be within 10 or 15 years, old enough to be either a fan of the Indiana Jones series or a big James Bond guy, or maybe even a fan of the Terminator series. And now all these iconic actors who are part of those series,
Billy,
you're surrounded by.
It's bananas. You know, we actors don't like to reveal our ages, but let's just say I grew up on all of Harrison's movies.
Yeah.
That whole canon you just mentioned, we probably grew up on all the same movies from the 80s and forward. Star Wars, Indy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was much more a big Terminator, Indiana Jones fan than I was a Star Wars fan, although I saw all the Star Wars movies.
Sure.
Same. You know, the first series. Anyway, I haven't caught all the recent ones. But just those Indiana Jones action movies were such a part of my childhood. I mean, but you don't want to freak out. You can't kind of germ over the star of the series either.
You certainly don't want to freak out. but Harrison's so kind listen, Harrison's like probably my number one just favorite actor of all time. If I had to, you know, if you forced me to pick, obviously I love all the character guys and stuff like that, which character is just really code for you don't have a great chin, right? Character actors are just really people who don't have strong jawline. So I have the beard to give it, you know, so I can move up on the call sheet.
Or a strong muscles, like if you're not ripped.
Well, hold on. Can you see my?
Well, I'm not done.
Right.
I'm right there. Right. I'd be a character actor at best.
Yeah. I'm your everyman. Exactly.
Did you get to spend a little time with Harrison or a little chit-chat time with him along the way?
I'm pinching myself. Amazingly, I got to spend a great amount. I spent more time with Harrison off, like not working with him, on the really? Show, just off. Yeah. He's great. Just a great guy. We had some dinners and some cocktails and yeah, we got after it a little bit. We had a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
Are you telling me you got lit up with Harrison Ford, a drunk set with Indiana Jones? I mean,
I'm telling you, we had a great time. That man is a stone cold professional in every aspect, riding a horse, shooting a gun. I'm not going to confirm or deny that we enjoyed some tequilas together and some whiskeys, but he's just a jovial guy and he is fun. He doesn't, I'm sure you've heard this, but he likes to mix with the cast. He's not, you know, hiding out. He'll talk. Yeah. We talked about our kids. We talked about, he was telling me a lot about his flying, stuff like that, which is just like, you know what I mean? Dream.
I mean, and then you're kind of working for Donald Whitfield, as played by Timothy Dalton. Did you spend a little time with him? I'm just going through the cast and looking for all the stories at this point, I guess.
Listen,
did you spend a little time with James Bond?
I got Helen, Robert, Harrison, James Bond, Timothy Dalton. It was like everyone I worked with is just, and of course, I can't forget Jerome Flynn, who I do most of my stuff with, Jerome is just, I mean, I'm working with Braun. I was like, this is insane.
So I didn't know him from his other characters. That's a Game of Thrones reference, right?
Game of Thrones, yeah.
I haven't watched that.
Plays one of the best, funniest characters on the show. He's sort of this pirate swordsman renegade who's protecting Jaime Lannister, I believe.
Okay.
You'll have to watch.
But his acting on this show is, he steals every scene. I mean, and it's hard to do that with a character like Donald Whitfield too, but he's just really compelling, and you can see his mind turning in the background. It's just
Jerome's just completely dialed in. It's great. It was awesome working with him and, you know, being able to hang out with him as well, because we'd have acting discussions and I said, hey, I'm going to do this and just try to listen and really be engaged and not do much. You know, that's one of the challenges sometimes for me, as you can see, I'm sort of animated. It's just, you know, relaxing into it and just really being present in the scene, which I was able to do. And of course, and going back to Tim, if you're like, right, I'm with 007, The Living Daylights. I saw that in the theater as a kid. And I'm thinking, plus he's tall. I didn't know how tall he was.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Tim's really, I think he's like 6'3 or 4 or something. You're like, Tim did not like the cold. Brian, it's so cold. It's so cold out here. I said, yeah, Tim, we're on the side of a mountain. But it's just ridiculously cold.
I like that you go for Tim. Did you slip in a Timmy?
I never tried Timmy.
No, maybe not. No, maybe that's never not tried such a good Tim. Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I just go for the first name usually, I think, on set. Yeah. Seems appropriate. I think it'd be weird if I was Mr. Dalton. I guess I could do it. With him, Mr. Dalton, you know, maybe. I don't remember, but I called them by their first names, so.
Is he a sir yet? He's not officially a sir, I don't think. Sir Timothy Dalton? He might be.
I don't know the answer to that. I know Helen's a dame, the Dame Helen Mirren, but I don't know about him. If he's in the, if he holds a rank in the...
on Wikipedia.
I mean, he's licensed to kill. I mean, what else do you need? You're not worried about titles.
Well, and he does. In episode 5, we see you, I think, throwing one of the first bodies. And there's some debate over whether or not this is the actual train station, some train station debate. But is that the idea that this is the train station? This is really one of the first bodies we see go over the edge.
I believe this is the first time you see the train station.
Okay.
Yeah.
The reason I say there's debate is because it looked like less of a cliff than we see 100 years later as Kevin Costner's characters, or I guess more it'd be, a number of people throw bodies over the train station. But
right. Maybe it's a different section of the train station. I mean, I don't know. You know, they've built roads in the modern day. Maybe it was around the bend. I don't know.
Okay.
I like that you're thinking about that, though. It didn't look as steep.
Well, I mean, on this podcast, I get so into the weeds, especially when it comes to the family tree, the Dutton family tree. And now the death of Jack Dutton just blows up all of my theories. Because in my mind, maybe Spencer Dutton and Alexandra's baby was adopted. I was still holding hope that Jack and Elizabeth were going to father the future John Dutton down the line. And now I don't know what to think anymore. I don't know how we get there any longer.
Yeah, we're in the same boat. I try to follow the family tree because there's some gaps where there could be, you know, and you see the tombstones in the graveyard right on Yellowstone. And it's like, I think one of them is, they pass by and I forget what episode, but like there's one that says Ned or something.
Ned and Chance Dutton.
We haven't seen Ned or Chance yet.
No.
Maybe.
And I don't think we will. Because I think the dates on those were already passed or something.
Were they? I'd have to go back.
So to a certain extent, I give Taylor Sheridan a little bit of wiggle room because I don't think he had in his mind when he wrote season one of Yellowstone that we were going to be now in season two of 1923. Like, if he
have you pondered the idea that in the area that Rip might be a great descendant of Clyde?
Well, now that's interesting. Could it be? Is this a possibility or is it just something that you're toying with?
Could it be? I mean, I'm definitely toying with it.
Well, no, I'm not going to
say. I'm opening up a can of worms.
Okay, that's interesting.
I thought that, maybe he gets taller and more handsome as the years go by, as more people get to Montana.
Maybe marries a woman with darker hair to kind of melt. He has a little bit of a European look, a little Scottish look. Oh, boy. Okay.
Oh, you know?
We don't got enough time, I don't think, to go down that rabbit hole. couple more questions for you, Brian.
Sure.
I'm just kind of curious how you watch this show. Like, every night, are you there kind of to watch with the family, or did you see the whole season two already and you're done with it?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm watching along with everybody. I got to see episode one a couple days early at the premiere, which was nice. And no, we're week to week like everybody else. I've read them, so I do sort of know what happens, but I haven't reread them in a couple months. So it's kind of great watching. It's nice. I'm watching as a fan.
Which sort of story arc do you just really kind of geek out on as a fan? Like, is there someone that you just, beyond your own scene?
Beyond the Clyde stuff and working with Jerome. I mean, I loved all the Africa stuff. I love Brandon's character. I mean, Spencer's just such a, a badass. I'm excited to see what happens when he comes back. You're like, oh, God, would you get to Montana already? So we can,
that's it.
Do this thing, right? I mean, I love that whole thing. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. And Alexandra and Spencer's sort of relationship is just, I mean, especially in season one, it was so riveting on so many different levels, not only because they were just shacking it up every chance they could, but there was just so many layers to it.
They were shacking. I mean, they did it in a tree. I mean, that's crazy.
I don't know how you do that.
I don't do that.
No, it's not advisable.
Not at this age, no.
Not without a good stunt double.
Right.
let me end it just by asking here. I mean, if you could, you kind of give our listeners a little bit of a tease as to what's on the way for Clyde in episodes 7, 8. How many episodes we got? Do we know?
I believe they're doing 8. It's going to be 8.
Okay. 2 episodes left in this season. And then after that, I guess no one's saying if there's more.
I can say that Clyde's itching for a fight, put it that way.
Okay. He's betting on the under, though, in terms of how many episodes you got left to live. Because you kill a Dutton, it just seems like Spencer's going to get you.
Well, he's got to have time if he's related to Rip and in some capacity, right?
True.
Billy, I'm teasing you. I'm just trying to blow your mind. That's a Brian stirring the pot.
Mm-hmm. When there's all these Clyde Rip headlines that are getting aggregated, just raise your hand and be like, that was me. I was just messing with that dude. He seemed like a good sport who would fall for anything.
I'm going to be
and then I'll cover that too.
It was all Billy.
Yeah, it was all us.
Yeah, well, it's fun, man. It's going to heat up, man. It's great. I mean, it really is. There's going to be people upset with some things for sure, and there's going to be people yourself. I'm super excited though. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, well, congratulations on the shows and the success, and on killing a Dutton, because that's certainly a big notch in the gun belt.
Thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it. I know because I've actually listened to a bunch, and I
thank you.
I know it's implied sometimes, but I think you enjoyed the Clyde character, and you guys have always given Clyde some love, and I appreciate that.
That's funny that you picked up on that. My co-host Addison is like, okay, Billy, he's not that big of a deal. And I can't wait for her to hear this conversation. Be like, see, I told you, he's a big effing deal.
Yeah. Addison, I'd listened to the preview one and I'd listened to some of the Yellowstones. I listened to it like, you know, I'm in LA, right? So you're always in the car. So we'll put it on.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much. Yeah. And hey, if Harrison's bored, he wants to dial in, we'll take him too. I got time for him.
Yeah, I'll see what I can do.